Crop circles opened everywhere. Now the universes swung into line. They ceased their boiling spaghetti dance, and to pass through this chicane of history, charged forward neck and neck in their race across the rubber sheet of incontinent time. At such time, as Ponder Stibbons dimly perceived, they had an effect on one another. Shafts of reality crackled back and forward as the universes jostled for position. If you were someone who had trained their mind to be the finest of receivers, and were running it at the moment with the gain turned up until the knob broke, you might pick up some very strange signals indeed. The clock ticked. Granny Weatherwax sat in front of the open box, reading. Occasionally she stopped and closed her eyes and pinched her nose. Not knowing the future was bad enough, but at least she understood why. Now she was getting flashes of déjà vu. It had been going on all week. But they weren't her déjà vus. She was getting them for the first time, as it were. Flashes of memory that couldn't have existed. Couldn't have existed. She was Esme Weatherwax, sane as a brick, always had been. She'd never been... There was a knock at the door. She blinked, glad to be free of those thoughts. It took her a second or two to focus on the present. Then she folded up the paper, slipped it into its envelope, pushed the envelope back into its bundle, put the bundle into the box, locked the box with a small key which she hung over the fireplace, and walked to the door. She did a last-minute check to make sure she hadn't absent-mindedly taken all her clothes off or something, and opened it.
"Evening," said Nanny Ogg, holding out a bowl with a cloth over it. "I've brung you some..."
Granny Weatherwax was looking past her.
"Who are these people?" she said.
The three girls looked embarrassed.
"See, they came round my house and said..."
Nanny Ogg began.
"Don't tell me, let me guess," said Granny.
She strode out and inspected the trio.
"Well, well, well," she said. "My word, my word. Three girls who want to be witches, am I right?"
Her voice went falsetto.
"Oh, please, Mrs. Ogg, we have seen the error of our ways. We want to learn proper witchcraft." "Yes?"
"Yes, something like that," said Nanny, "but..."
"This is witchcraft," said Granny Weatherwax. It's not a game of conkers. Oh, dearie, dearie me."
She walked along the very short row of trembling girls.
"What's your name, girl?"
"Magenta Frottage, ma'am."
"I bet that's not what your mum calls you."
Magenta looked at her feet.
"She calls me Violet, ma'am."
"Well, it's a better colour than magenta," said Granny. "Want to be a bit mysterious, eh? Want to make folks feel you've got a grip on the occult? Can you do magic? Your friend taught you anything, did she? Knock my hat off."
"What, ma'am?"
Granny Weatherwax stood back and turned around.
"Knock it off! I ain't trying to stop you. Go on."
Magenta shading to violet, shaded to pink.
I never got the hang of the psycho thingy."
"Oh, dear. Well, just let's see what the rest can do. Who are you, girl?"
"Amanita, ma'am."
"Such a pretty name. Let's see what you can do."
Amanita looked around nervously.
I don't think I can while you're watching me," she began.
"That's a shame. What about you on the end?"
"Agnes Knit,"
said Agnes, who was much faster on the uptake than the other two, and saw that there was no point in pushing Perdita.
"Go on, then. Try."
Agnes concentrated.
"Oh, dearie, dearie me," said Granny.
"And my hat's still on.
Show them, Githa."
Nanny Ogg sighed, picked up a piece of fallen branch, and hurled it at Granny's hat. Granny caught the stick in midair.
But you said we had to use magic,"
Amanita began.
"No, I didn't," said Granny.
"But anyone could have done that," said Magenta.
"Yes, but that's not the point," said Granny. "The point is that you didn't."
She smiled, which was unusual for her.
"Look, I don't want to be nasty to you. You're young. The world's full of things you could be doing. You don't want to be witches. Not if you knew what it means. Now just go away. Go home. Don't try the paranormal until you know what's normal. Go on, run along."
"But that's just trickery. That's what Diamanda said. You just use words and trickery," Magenta protested. Granny raised a hand. In the trees, the birds stopped singing.
Githa?
Nanny Og gripped her own hat brim defensively.
Esme, listen, this hat cost me $2.
The boom echoed through the woods. Bits of hat lining zigzagged gently out of the sky. Granny pointed her finger at the girls who tried to lean out of the way.
Now, she said, why don't you go and see to your friend? She was beat. She probably ain't very happy. That's no time to go leaving people.
They still stared at her. Her finger seemed to fascinate them.
I just asked you to go home. Perfectly reasonable voice. Do you want me to shout?
They turned and ran. Nanny Og glumly pushed her hand through the stricken hat brim.
It took me ages to get that pig cure together, she mumbled. You need 8 types of leaves. Willow leaves, tansy leaves, old man's trouser leaves. I was collecting them all day. It's not as though leaves grow on trees.
Granny Weatherwax watched the disappearing girls. Nanny Og paused, then she said,
Takes you back, eh? I remember when I was 15, standing in front of old Biddy Spective, and she said in that voice of hers, You want to be a what? And I was that frightened, I nearly whittled.
I never stood in front of anyone, said Granny Weatherwax distantly. I camped on old Nanny Gripe's garden until she promised to tell me everything she knew. That took her a week, and I had the afternoons free.
You mean you weren't chosen?
Me? Nah, I chose, said Granny.
The face she turned to Nanny Og was one she wouldn't forget in a hurry, although she might try.
I chose, Githa Og, and I want that you should know this right now. Whatever happens, I ain't never regretted anything. Never regretted one single thing, right?
If you say so, Esme.
What is magic? There is the wizard's explanation, which comes in 2 forms, depending on the age of the wizard. Older wizards talk about candles, circles, planets, stars, bananas, chants, runes, and the importance of having at least 4 good meals every day. Younger wizards, particularly the pale ones who spend most of their time in the high-energy magic building, chatter at length about fluxes in the morphic nature of the universe, the essentially impermanent quality of even the most apparently rigid time-space framework, the implausibility of reality, and so on. What this means is that they've got hold of something hot and are gabbling the physics as they go along. It was at the high-energy magic building that the Thaum, hitherto believed to be the smallest possible particle of magic, was successfully demonstrated to be made up of reasons, or reality, fragments. Currently, research indicates that each reason, or thingy, is itself made up of a combination of at least 5 flavours known as up, down, sideways, sex appeal, and peppermint. It was almost midnight. The Amanda ran up the hill towards the dancers, the briars and heather tearing at her dress. The humiliation banged back and forth in her skull. Stupid, malicious old women. And stupid people, too. She'd won. According to the rules, she'd won. But everyone had laughed at her. That stung. The recollection of those stupid faces, all grinning, and everyone supporting those horrible old women who had no idea about the meaning of witchcraft and what it could become. She'd show them. Ahead of her, the dancers were dark against the moonlit clouds. Nanny Og looked under her bed in case there was a man there. Well, you never knew your luck. She was going to have an early night. It had been a busy day. There was a jar of boiled sweets by her bed, and a thick glass bottle of the clear fluid from her complicated still out behind the woodshed. It wasn't exactly whiskey, and it wasn't exactly gin, but it was exactly 90% proof, and a great comfort during those worrying moments that sometimes occurred around 3 a.m. when you woke up and forgot who you were. After a glass of the clear liquid, you still didn't remember who you were, but that was all right now because you were someone else anyway. She plumped up the 4 pillows, kicked her fluffy slippers into the corner, and pulled the blankets over her head, creating a small, warm and slightly rank cave. She sucked a boiled sweet. Nanny had only 1 tooth left, and that had taken all she could throw at it for many years, so a sweet at bedtime wasn't going to worry it much. After a few seconds, a sense of pressure on her feet indicated that the cat Grebo had taken up his accustomed place on the end of the bed.
Grebo always slept on Nanny's bed. The way he'd affectionately tried to claw your eyeballs out in the morning was as good as an alarm clock, but she always left a window open all night in case he wanted to go out and disembowel something, bless him. Well, well, elves. They couldn't hear you say the word inside your head anyway. At least, not unless they were real close. She really thought they'd seen the last of them. How long was it now? Must be hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Witches didn't like to talk about it because they'd made a big mistake about the elves. They'd seen through the buggers in the end, of course, but it had been a close thing. And there'd been a lot of witches in those days. They'd been able to stop them at every turn, make life in this world too hot for them. Fought them with iron. Nothing elvish could stand iron. It blinded them or something. Blinded them all over. There weren't many witches now, not proper witches. More of a problem, though, was that people didn't seem to be able to remember what it was like with the elves around. Life was certainly more interesting then, but usually because it was shorter. And it was more colourful, if you liked the colour of blood. It got so people didn't even dare talk openly about the bastards. You said, the Shining Ones. You said, the Fair Folk. And you spat and touched iron. But generations later you forgot about the spitting and the iron, and you forgot why you used those names for them, and you remembered only that they were beautiful. Yes, there'd been a lot of witches in them days. Too many women found an empty cradle or a husband that never came home from the hunt. Had been the hunt. Elves, the bastards. And yet somehow, yes, they did things to memory. Nanny Og turned over in bed. Grebo growled in protest. Take dwarves and trolls. For e.g., people said, oh, you can't trust them. Trolls are okay if you've got them in front of you, and some of them are decent enough in their way, but they're cowardly and stupid. And as for dwarfs, well, they're greedy and devious devils, all right, fair enough. Sometimes you meet one of the little clever sods, that's not too bad, but overall they're no better than trolls. In fact, they're just like us. But they ain't any prettier to look at. And they've got no style. And we're stupid and the memory plays tricks and we remember the elves for their beauty and the way they move and forget what they were. We're like mice, saying, say what you like, cats have got real style. People never quaked in their beds for fear of dwarfs. They never hid under the stairs from trolls. They might have chased them out of the hen house, but trolls and dwarfs were never any more than a bloody nuisance. They were never a terror in the night. We only remembers that the elves sang. We forgets what it was they were singing about. Nanny Og turned over again. There was a slithering noise from the end of the bed and a muffled yowl as Grebo hit the floor. And Nanny sat up. Get your walking paws on, you young fella, me lad, we're going out. As she passed through the midnight kitchen, she paused, took one of the big black flat irons from the hob by the fire, and attached it to a length of clothesline. For all her life she'd walked at night through Lancre with no thought of carrying a weapon of any sort. Of course, for most of that time she'd recognisably been a witch, and any importunate prowler would have ended up taking his essentials away in a paper bag, but even so it was generally true of any woman in Lancre. Man, too, come to that. Now she could sense her own fear. The elves were coming back all right, casting their shadows before them. Diamanda reached the crest of the hill. She paused. She wouldn't put it past that old weatherwax woman to have followed her. She felt sure there had been something tracking her in the woods. There was no one else around. She turned.
Evening, miss.
You did follow me. Granny got to her feet from the shadow of the piper, where she had been sitting quite invisibly in the blackness.
"Learned that from my dad," she said. "When he went hunting, he always used to say a bad hunter chases, a good hunter waits."
"Oh, so you're hunting me now?"
"No, I was just waiting. I knew you'd come up here. You haven't got anywhere else to go. You've come to call her, haven't you? Let me see your hands."
It wasn't a request, it was a command. Diamanda found her hands moving of their own accord. Before she could pull them back, the old woman had grabbed them and held them firmly. Her skin felt like sacking.
"Never done a hard day's work in your life, have you?" said Granny pleasantly. "Never picked cabbages with the ice on them, or dug a grave, or milked a cow, or laid out a corpse.
"You don't have to do all that to be a witch," the Amanda snapped.
"Did I say so? And let me tell you something about beautiful women in red with stars in their hair, and probably moons too, and voices in your head when you slept, and power when you came up here. She offered you lots of power, I expect. All you wanted for free."
The Amanda was silent.
"Because it happened before. There's always someone who'll listen."
Granny Weatherwax's eyes seemed to lose their focus.
"When you're lonely, and people around you seem too stupid for words, and the world is full of secrets that no one'll tell you."
"Are you reading my mind?"
"Yours?"
Granny's attention snapped back, and her voice lost its distant quality.
"Flowers and such like, dancing about without your drawers on, mucking about with cards and bits of string. And it worked, I expect. She gave you power for a while. Oh, she must have laughed. And then there is less power, and more price, and then no power, and you're paying every day. They always take more than they give, and what they give has less than no value. And they end up taking everything. What they like to get from us is our fear. What they want from us most of all is our belief. If you call them, they will come. You'll give them a channel if you call them here at circle time, where the world's thin enough to hear. The power in the dancers is weak enough now as it is, and I'm not having the lords and ladies back."
The Amanda opened her mouth.
"I ain't finished yet. You're a bright girl, lots of things you could be doing, but you don't want to be a witch. It's not an easy life."
You mad old woman, you've got it all wrong. Elves aren't like that."
"Don't say the word, don't say the word. They come when called."
"Good. Elf, 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 elf." Granny slapped her face hard.
"Even you knows that's stupid and childish," she said. "Now you listen to me. If you stay here, there's to be none of this stuff anymore. Or you can go somewhere else and find a future. Be a great lady, you've got the mind for it. And maybe you'll come back in 10 years loaded down with jewels and stuff, and lord it over all us stay-at-homes, and that will be fine. But if you stay here and keep trying to call the lords and ladies, then you'll be up against me again. Not playing stupid games in the daylight, but real witchcraft. Not messing around with moons and circles, but the true stuff, out of the blood and the bone, and out of the head. And you don't know nothing about that, right? And it don't allow for mercy."
The Amanda looked up. Her face was red where the slap had landed. "Go," she said. Granny reacted a second too late. The Amanda darted between the stones.
"You stupid child, not that way!"
The figure was already getting smaller, even though it appeared to be only a few feet away.
"Oh, drat!"
Granny dived after her and heard her skirt rip as the pocket tore. The poker she'd brought along whirred away and clanked against one of the dancers. There was a series of jerks and tings as the hobnails tore out of her boots and sped towards the stones. No iron could go through the stones, no iron at all. Granny was already racing over the turf when she realised what that meant. But it didn't matter, she'd made a choice. There was a feeling of dislocation as directions danced and twirled around, and then snow underfoot. It was white. It had to be white because it was snow, but patterns of colour moved across it, reflecting the wild dance of the permanent aurora in the sky. Dee Amanda was struggling. Her footwear was barely suitable for a city summer, and certainly not for a foot of snow. Whereas Granny Weatherwax's boots, even without their hobnails, could have survived a trot across lava. Even so, the muscles that were propelling them had been doing it for too long. Dee Amanda was outrunning her. More snow was falling out of a night sky. There was a ring of riders waiting a little way from the stones, with the Queen slightly ahead. Every witch knew her, or the shape of her. Dee Amanda tripped and fell, and then managed to bring herself up to a kneeling position. Granny stopped. The Queen's horse whinnied.
"Kneel before your Queen, you,"
said the elf. She was wearing red with a copper crown in her hair.
"Shan't, won't,"
said Granny Weatherwax.
"You are in my kingdom, woman,"
said the Queen.
"You do not come or go without the leave of me. You will kneel."
"I come and go without the leave of
anyone," said Granny Weatherwax. "Never done it before, ain't starting now."
She put her hand on dear Amanda's shoulder.
"These are your elves," she said. "Beautiful, ain't they?"
The warriors must have been more than 2 metres tall. They did not wear clothes so much as items strung together, scraps of fur, bronze plates, strings of brightly coloured feathers. Blue and green tattoos covered most of their exposed skin. Several of them held drawn bows, the tips of their arrows following Granny's every move. Their hair messed around their heads like a halo, thick with grease. And although their faces were indeed the most beautiful dear Amanda had ever seen, it was beginning to creep over her that there was something subtly wrong, some quirk of expression that did not quite fit.
"The only reason we're still alive now is that we're more fun alive than dead," said Granny's voice behind her. "You know you shouldn't listen to the crabbed old woman," said the Queen. "What can she offer?" "More than snow in summertime," said Granny. "Look at their eyes. Look at their eyes."
The Queen dismounted.
"Take my hand, child," she said.
The Amanda stuck out a hand gingerly. There was something about the eyes. It wasn't the shape or the colour. There was no evil glint. But there was a look. It was such a look that a microbe might encounter if it could see up from the bottom end of the microscope. It said,
"You are nothing." It said, "You are flawed, you have no value." It said, "You are animal." It said, "Perhaps you may be a pet, or perhaps you may be a quarry." It said, "And the choice is not yours."
She tried to pull her hand away.
"Get out of her mind, old crone."
Granny's face was running with sweat.
"I ain't in her mind, elf. I'm keeping you out."
The Queen smiled. It was the most beautiful smile dear Amanda had ever seen.
"And you have some power too, amazing. I never thought you'd amount to anything, Esmeralda Weatherwax. But it's no good here. Kill them both, but not at the same time. Let the other one watch."
She climbed onto her horse again, turned it round, and galloped off. Two of the elves dismounted, drawing thin bronze daggers from their belts.
"Well, that's about it, then,"
said Granny Weatherwax as the warriors approached. She dropped her voice.
"When the time comes," she said, "run."
"What time?"
"You'll know."
Granny fell to her knees as the elves approached.
"Oh, dearie me, oh, spare my life. I am but a poor old woman and skinny also," she said. "Oh, spare my life, young sir. Oh, lawks!"
She curled up, sobbing. Dear Amanda looked at her in astonishment, not least at how anyone could expect to get away with something like that. Elves had been away from humans for a long time. The first elf reached her, hauled her up by her shoulder, and got a double-handed, bony-knuckled punch in the area that Nanny Ogg would be surprised that Esme Weatherwax even knew about. Dear Amanda was already running. Granny's elbow caught the other elf in the chest as she set off after her. Behind her, she heard the merry laughter of the elves. Dear Amanda had been surprised at Granny's old lady act. She was far more surprised when Granny drew level, but Granny had more to run away from.
"They've got horses,"
Granny nodded. And it's true that horses go faster than people, but it's not instantly obvious to everyone that this is only true over moderate distances. Over short distances, a determined human can outrun a horse, because they've only got half as many legs to sort out. Granny reached over and gripped Diamanda's arm.
"Head for the gap between the piper and the drummer."
"Which ones are they?"
"Oh, you don't even know that?"
Humans can outrun a horse, indeed. It was preying on Granny Weatherwax's mind that no one can outrun an arrow. Something whined past her ear. The circle of stones seemed as far away as ever. Nothing for it. It oughtn't to be possible. She'd only ever tried it seriously when she was lying down, or at least when she had something to lean against. She tried it now. There were 4 elves chasing them. She didn't even think about looking into their minds. But the horses, the horses. They were carnivores, minds like an arrowhead. The rules of borrowing were, you didn't hurt, you just rode inside their heads. You didn't involve the subject in any way. Well, not so much a rule as such more of a general guideline. A stone-tipped arrow went through her hat.
Hardly really a guideline, even. In fact, not even... Oh, drat.
She plunged into the lead horse's mind, down through the layers of barely controlled madness, which is what is inside even a normal horse's brain. For a moment she looked out through its bloodshot eyes at her own figure staggering through the snow. For a moment she was trying to control six legs at once, two of them in a separate body. In terms of difficulty, playing one tune on a musical instrument and singing a totally different one was a stroll in the country by comparison, except for Nanny Ogg, who did it all the time, although not on purpose. She knew she couldn't do it for more than a few seconds before total confusion overwhelmed mind and body, but a second was all she needed. She let the confusion arise, dumped it in its entirety in the horse's mind, and withdrew sharply, picking up control of her own body as it began to fall. There was one horrible moment in the horse's head. It wasn't sure what it was, or how it had got there. More importantly, it didn't know how many legs it had. There was a choice of two, or four, or possibly even six. It compromised on three. Granny heard it scream and collapse noisily by the sound of things taking a couple of others with it. She risked a look sideways at Diamanda, who wasn't there. She was in the snow some way back, trying with difficulty to get to her feet. The face she turned to Granny was as pale as the snow. There was an arrow sticking out of her shoulder. Granny darted back, grabbed the girl, and hauled her upright.
Come on, nearly there.
I can't. Diamanda slumped forward. Granny caught her before she hit the snow, and with a grunt of effort slung her over her shoulder. A few more steps, and all she had to do was fall forward. A clawed hand snatched at her dress. And three figures fell, rolling over and over in the summer bracken. The elf was first to its feet, looking around in dazed triumph. It already had a long copper knife in its hand. It focused on Granny, who had landed on her back. She could smell the rankness of it as it raised the knife, and she sought desperately for a way into its head. Something flashed past her vision. A length of rope had caught the elf's neck and went tight as something swished through the air. The creature stared in horror as a flat iron whirred a few feet away from its face and swung past its ear, winding around and around with increasing speed but a decreasing orbital radius, until it connected heavily with the back of the elf's head, lifting it off its feet and dropping it heavily on the turf. Nanny Ogg appeared in Granny's vision.
"Phew! Good enough whiff, don't it?" she said. "You can smell elves a mile off."
Granny scrambled upright. There was nothing but grass inside the circle. No snow, no elves. She turned to Diamanda. So did Nanny. The girl was lying unconscious.
"Elf shot," said Granny. "Oh, bugger. The point's still in there."
Nanny scratched her head.
"I could probably get the point out, no problem," she said. "But I don't know about the poison. We could tie a tourniquet round the affected part."
Her neck would be favourite, then.
Granny sat down with her chin on her knees. Her shoulders ached.
"Poof, got to get me breath back," she said.
Images swam in the forefront of her mind. Here it came again. She knew there were such things as alternative futures, after all. That's what the future meant. But she'd never heard of alternative pasts. She could remember having just gone through the stones, if she concentrated. But she could remember other things. She could remember being in bed in her own house. But that was it. It was a house, not a cottage. But she was her. They were her own memories. She had a nagging feeling that she was asleep right now. Dully, she tried to focus on Nanny Ogg. There was something comfortingly solid about Githa Ogg. Nanny had produced a penknife.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"Gone to put it out of its misery, Esme."
"Doesn't look miserable to me."
Nanny Ogg's eyes gleamed speculatively.
"Could soon arrange that, Esme."
"Don't go torturing it just because it's lying down, Githa."
"Damn well ain't waiting for it to stand up again, Esme."
"Githa!"
"Well, they used to carry off babbies. I ain't having that again. The thought of someone carrying off our pusey."
"Even elves aren't that daft. Never seen such a sticky child in all me life."
Granny pulled gently at Diamanda's eyelid.
"Out cold," she said. "Off playing with the fairies."
She picked the girl up.
"Come on, I'll carry her. You bring Mr. Tinkerbell."
"That was brave of you, carrying her over your shoulder," said Nanny, "with them elves firing arrows too."
"And it meant less chance of one hitting me too," said Granny.
Nanny Ogg was shocked.
"What? You never thought that, did you?"
"Well, she'd been hit already. If I'd been hit too, neither of us had got out," said Granny simply.
"But that's a bit heartless, Esme."
Heartless it may be, but headless it ain't. I've never claimed to be nice, just to be sensible. No need to look like that. Now, are you coming, or are you going to stand there with your mouth open all day?
Nanny closed her mouth and then opened it again to say, "What you going to do?"
"Well, do you know how to cure her?"
"Me? No."
"Right, me neither. But I know someone who might know," she said. "And we can shove him in the dungeons for now. Lots of iron bars down there, that should keep him quiet."
"How'd he get through?"
"He was holding on to me. I don't know how it works. Maybe the stone force opens to let humans through or something. Just so long as his friends stay inside, that's all I'm bothered about."
Nanny heaved the unconscious elf onto her shoulders without much effort. As has been pointed out earlier in the Discworld Chronicles, entire agricultural economies have been based on the lifting power of little old ladies in black dresses.
"Smells worse than the bottom of a goat's bed," she said. "It's a bath for me when I get home."
"Oh, dear," said Granny. "It gets worse, don't it?"